and welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back from the summer hiatus. It's been since April the 29th, since Luke and I have recorded last, and now here we are on July the 5th. I figured from the amount of tweets that we get, Luke, it was about time to start revving things back up. So here we are with another episode. How are things for you tonight, Mr. Buer?
They are good. Interesting text message to receive. Somebody wanted to talk about football in July. You know, with this whole new head coach, it feels like you see football in the headlines just about every week. So I was surprised. I was a little surprised to see you want to talk a little football, but also at the same time, not surprised. So it'll be fun to get back into the swing of things as football season nears. So Ryan, let's just get to a few, just kind of a few business items. When you have a coaching change, right, there's always kind of, a drop off in players, whether it be transfers, whatever, And you know, the Gophers definitely had a few of those, probably not as many as some expected, given the coaching change. But some notable players, one being Galen Elmore, is off to East Carolina. I'd be curious to hear a little bit more about that situation, given being he was re-recruited, you were seeing that he was getting some pretty notable offers, but then ended up at East Carolina. What's the story there?
Yeah. So like you mentioned, it's, and again, for people that are like, well, it wasn't this Galen Elmore thing like a month and a half ago. Yes. But we haven't actually recorded a podcast since right. late April. So we're going to be going over some older type of items. So, but with Galen Elmore, I mean, that was an interesting recruiting process anyway to follow. You saw like Oregon get in there, and you saw a couple other places like Oklahoma extend offers. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, this is Galen Elmore, someone who didn't exactly have a tremendously productive career. I mean, he was solid. He did some good things for Minnesota, but I don't know that he reached the ceiling of what we thought he was going to be when he signed. He was one of the best recruits in his recruiting class. And then you see all these different schools coming out of the woodwork for him. He takes all of his official visits and ultimately ends up at East Carolina, where he felt a connection to that staff, and he's going to be out there for his grad transfer year. Even as we're sitting here now, I don't believe he's at ECU yet.
He still has to graduate?
I think he's graduated, but I know from social media that he is still around here in Minnesota. So I don't know if he joins in the mid-July session. I don't know if it's like he enrolls actually at the start of fall camp. I'm not exactly sure what the deal is, but Galen and Minnesota just at the end of spring ball didn't see a great fit for what Galen's mindset and mentality were going to be in terms of a new coaching staff coming in. And so the decision was made for him to pursue a graduate degree elsewhere. He got his degree, and I know he's extremely proud of that, graduating from the University of Minnesota. But Mr. Elmore is going to be playing for the Pirates of ECU now.
So real quick, your thoughts on graduate transfers. You like it or do you not like it? Specifically in football.
Yeah, I was just about to say, because football and basketball are two totally different beasts, right, in terms of graduate transfers. Like on the basketball side of things, and for folks who want to listen to Gopher Basketball podcast, Mr. Buer also does a podcast with Ryan James, the most knowledgeable Gopher basketball mind in America.
Yeah,
and
you're
it's
bar
none. And so I'm going to plug that. It's called Talk Gopher Buckets. If you're looking for that, search for some pro-am thoughts from Luke and Ryan, who have been there. So you can search that on iTunes. But graduate transfers in football, in my opinion, are overrated.
Yeah.
You're always trying to find that impact transfer that's going to, you know, bring you to the next level. More times than not, it's just going to be a solid depth guy. You know, sometimes it is like a Russell Wilson type of deal where, he goes from NC State to Wisconsin and elevates the program, even though I think that year Wisconsin should have been still a lot better than they were. But most of the time, they're just depth guys, somewhere mm-hmm. that can come in, plug a hole for a year while you're waiting for a redshirt freshman or a freshman or redshirt sophomore to get another year of experience under their belt. But for the most part, I think that the graduate transfer thing is, again, if he's graduating and transferring elsewhere, well, he can't be that great of a player, folks, because if he was, he'd be going to the NFL and being drafted in the NFL, considering sure. he's a redshirt junior. But if he can be a solid guy for you and provide some depth, more power to him.
Right. Okay, let's talk a couple other players. Andrew Hart ends up at Rutgers. Pretty obvious there. You know, he's a kicker that, you know, likely wasn't gonna overcome or win a kicking battle against the Big Ten kicker of the year, more than likely.
Yeah, that was an interesting random note I saw. I remember being on Twitter and I saw one of the Rutgers beat writers I followed retweet Andrew Hart to Rutgers, and I'm like, is that the same Andrew Hart who's been at Minnesota for the last 3 years? Is a excuse me?
Right.
And then I finally look into it. And so Andrew is going to, he was Minnesota's number two kicker for the last few years. Emmett Carpenter beat him out in fall camp last year. And he saw that obviously you're probably not going to overtake the Big Ten kicker of the year. So it just happens to be circumstantial. I'm sure that Jerry Kill is out at Rutgers, and that's where Andrew's going to compete for his final season of eligibility, and more power to him. Again, a guy that never really got to do a whole lot here at Minnesota in terms of on the field. So hopefully he can be someone that gives something to Rutgers, and hopefully not against Minnesota.
All right. Can you touch on the whole Eric Abogi thing? So it's quite the saga. It's kind of an academic thing. He did sign with Minnesota, but then was not academically eligible. You know, that's a whole ordeal in process that recruits have to go through. You know, the university has pretty high standards in terms of academic success. And then now we basically hear this last week or 2 weeks ago, he ends up at Wyoming. Can you give us a little rundown there?
Yeah, this has been ongoing here now since January, since really the coaching change, when I remember just going over things with old contacts and remember hearing something about Eric Abogi. So I shoot a text message over and I was like, so is this Abogi academic thing real? And it was, yeah. And I'm like, okay, well, if that's the case, why did you guys end up taking him knowing that he was an academic risk and there was a bunch of hemming and hawing? And then come signing day last year, Eric did not sign with Minnesota. And that was the big, that was the big thing, was why didn't Eric sign? It turns out he wasn't NCAA. He wasn't through the clearinghouse yet. So then he busts his tail in the classroom for the final 4 months of his senior year, becomes NCAA eligible. But just because he was NCAA eligible doesn't mean he can get into the University of Minnesota. That just means he got through the clearinghouse and he has a shot to make it in terms of open enrolling at a school. So because he was cleared in the clearinghouse, he still had the option to go to Iowa Western, where he could have been a junior college kid, went and got his AA, because he was not academically eligible. You have to graduate with your AA before you can move on. So he turned down that opportunity, and he went on a couple of official visits to, I believe, New Mexico and Wyoming. And he ended up signing it with Craig Bohl, the Fighting Craig Bohls of Wyoming. And I know this was a big topic. Well, why didn't he pick Minnesota? He couldn't get into Minnesota. And I know from talking with a North Dakota State source today that they were disappointed that they couldn't get him into NDSU as well. So Eric is going to end up at Wyoming and playing for Craig Bohl. And I am very high on Eric. I wish he could have been a Gopher, because I think he would have been a fantastic guard for Minnesota. But it always makes me a little bit, you know, knowing that hopefully someday down the line I will have children, Luke. Mm-hmm. It's a humbling moment knowing that there are many kids I talk with each and every year that are extremely talented players and should be having a lot more Division I college football offers, but they don't because they don't have the grades.
Sure.
And again, it's the freshman and sophomore years where they're screwing around in the classroom, failing classes or getting D's. It's just going to screw you long term. So again, academic things are something that happen each and every year, and unfortunately for Mr. Abogi, it didn't work out for Minnesota.
All right, so I want to hit on Drew Olatarski, who is by far the number one receiver last year for the Gophers, and he left a big void. But he recently caught on in the CFL, and when you brought this topic up, I was a little surprised to see this note, and I was curious, why do we care about the CFL, Ryan? Like, seriously?
Hey, anytime a Gopher can make a professional football league team of any sort, I think it needs to be applauded. And the random factoid I want to talk about it was in the supplemental draft too for the Canadian Football League.
Okay.
And I believe the only way you can be chosen in that is if you have some sort of Canadian bloodline. So the kid from California, the California all-time leading receiver randomly has a Canadian bloodline in him, so he's able to be drafted into the CFL. So it was just good for Drew because he had to go through 4 years of Leidner Island missing him on wide open crossing routes, and unfortunately we'll never know. I wish Drew could be here for this first year in a Kirk Ciarrocca offense with hopefully a more consistent and accurate Demaryius Croft and or potentially Connor Rota throwing him the ball. But it's something that at least Drew is going to have be able to chase his dream of playing in a professional football league, and more power to him.
Well, I don't know if you live in a house that follows the Supreme Court very closely, but
I do not.
But I do, and a conversation in our home recently has been the definition of bona fide, and what is a bona fide relationship. And I'm curious to see what Drew Olatarski's bona fide relationship to Canada is to allow him to be in the supplemental draft. Yeah, most people aren't going to understand that, but that's fine. Okay, let's actually talk to something a little bit more interesting. Non-conference season. Those games usually are at better times, and now we actually know those times. And when I say better times, I mean usually later in the evening or later in the day, if you're one like me that prefers that. And so we have game times for all the non-conference games. We also know what television networks are going to be on. And this is also when we get to envy the Pacific Coast so much, because they literally have the best football viewing situation of any time zone possible.
So the interesting part about all four of these game times that have been announced here in the last couple of months is none of them are 11 a.m. kickoffs for all of you college football fans who'd like to get up at 6 in the morning and start tailgating and have a couple 1-2-3 screwdrivers. By the way, that is probably my favorite alcoholic beverage, is a screwdriver. Just random factoid about me. Anyways, so you look at these four game times that have been announced. The opening night game against Buffalo is going to be at 6 p.m. on BTN. The subsequent week, we get some Pac-12 after dark at a 9 p.m. Central kickoff on Fox Sports 1. So I'm not entirely sure how many members of the Gopher faithful are going to be awake, but that's going to be a heck of a game out there on the West Coast. And then the final non-conference game is going to be against Middle Tennessee State at 2:30 on BTN. And then we also know that homecoming is going to be either at 2:30 or 3 p.m. Central on BTN. So the big thing to note here is I hope you don't like 11 a.m. games, because again, it's weird for me to be talking about four college football games and they're all either in the afternoon or evening.
It's not a big surprise. It feels like a lot of the non-conference games for the most part are usually in the evening, but you know, I guess there have been some 11 o'clock ones, but you know, the rest of the schedule always comes out kind of week to week. They're all, you know, TV's always trying to,
yeah, and that's prioritize. What it's probably going to be here, right? Is once the schedule gets going and then they can start flexing games and different things like that. But again, as you note, for like the most part over the past few years, you've seen this constant theme that the opening night game is usually on Thursday night. I think it's been at 6 p.m. It's been at 8 p.m. Depending on who the opponent was. No surprise that Oregon State's, I believe their home kickoff is this Oregon State versus Minnesota game. So they're going to have a night game. And then again, the final non-conference game is at 2:30. But again, it's interesting to talk about college football for Minnesota and not be 11 a.m.
Yeah, it's a positive. I'd imagine, I remember Tracy Clay saying that he actually really liked the 11 a.m. games, for whatever reason, something to do with,
I'm a fan of them.
Yeah, but it's something like super, they get back, right? Because they get back or something. That's what they like.
Yeah, they get back on time and they can get in a routine for the most part.
Yeah.
In terms of like, so the first three games of the season for Minnesota, 6 p.m., a 9 p.m., and a 2:30. It's messing, you know, Clay's point, I believe he spoke about this a few different times, was it helps the kids get into a routine in terms of consecutive 11 a.m. kickoffs, in terms of this is what time I have to be up. This is what time I have to be the bus. This is what time I can start going out on the field. And so now that there's a bunch of different kickoff times, it's going to be a little bit interesting. Personally, I like the 11 a.m. kickoffs just because you know that you have the morning. Your morning and mid-afternoon is football, and then you can come home and do whatever else you want with your day. But you know, usually the morning after, the Sunday mornings here in the fall, I like to get up in a tree stand. So for like a 9 p.m. kickoff,
Yeah.
Technically, well, the deer season won't be open yet, but you know what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, I get where you're going. You know, I personally prefer the afternoon games, but, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, you know, for it, TV makes the schedule and that's always what's going to win. Okay, let's transition and talk a little bit of recruiting. I don't know if we actually covered this.
I don't think we did
before, but Brian Ferentz was questioning PJ Fleck's recruiting tactics. And, you know, obviously PJ has made a little bit of a little bit of noise in the Big Ten in recruiting, you know, able to secure a fairly good recruiting class in a short amount of time for the 2017 class. And now in the 2018 class, I think if I'm not wrong, Ryan, they have the most commits in the 2018 class right now and are fairly highly ranked kind of from a recruiting service standpoint. But Ferentz kind of took some shots at the tactics that the Gophers were implementing on the recruiting trail.
Yeah, it's pretty funny to me. And again, this again is about 6-8 weeks old, but I did want to touch on it because I don't believe we did. I don't think this was news at the time. But Brian Ferentz, Iowa's assistant coach, essentially said that Iowa State and Minnesota have a bunch of offers out there. And he's like, oh, but I wonder how many of them are actually committable. And then it was funny that next week, Iowa pulled a scholarship offer from a Wisconsin linebacker. And I remember putting on Twitter, you know, what about this, Mr. Ferentz? Did you pull this offer? Is that a committable offer? Again, what this all is just alluding to and getting to is that Brian Ferentz is a lot more worried about Minnesota on the recruiting trail. And I think Iowa in general is a lot more nervous about Minnesota on the recruiting trail than they have been in recent years. You haven't seen Minnesota and Iowa been in a ton of different recruiting battles in recent years. And now that PJ Fleck is here, they're in a lot more battles. Again, those are some that Minnesota have won, and like Tyreek Henderson and Elijah Teague, amongst others. And there's a couple that Minnesota have lost. Cody Insay, a kid from Balsam Lake. Noah Shannon just flipped from Minnesota to Iowa as well. We'll get into that here in a little bit. But Iowa's nervous about Minnesota, and that's always a good thing. And you look at Minnesota's recruiting class, Minnesota has a top 25 2018 recruiting class. So when you look at Iowa, they look at Minnesota and now see them as a threat. So now they're starting to take public shots and start to buckle up, Hawkeye fans, because I think Gophers are going to be in on more and more of your recruits.
You know, what I find interesting is it's just all a PR management, right? They're trying to preserve an image that they have and a brand that they have. I guess I'm not huge into recruiting like you are, but that seems to be like they're trying to manage it through, you know, public relations right now, taking shots at the Gophers to kind of solidify their existing brand. I find that interesting that they take such a public approach at it. But yeah, just
not really the way weird. I would have gone about it.
No. But
again, what that has to signal to you is, again, Fleck only been here half a year, 4, 5, 6 months now. In the Iowa coaching staff, which never really made a comment about Tracy Clay's recruiting style, is now taking shots, and it hasn't even been 6 months. So, yeah. Again, Iowa's on notice that Minnesota's going to be a player for a lot more Big Ten recruits.
Well, but PJ's also took some heat while at Western Michigan for recruiting tactics as well, maybe not recruiting tactics, but just his I wouldn't call it abrasive, but his very optimistic and very kind of loud, boisterous demeanor, right? He's taken some shots on that, but in the same respect, you've said this over and over again, that's just who he is, right? That isn't anything. It's not a shtick. He's not trying to pull one over people. Like, that's just truly who he is. And at the end of the day, I mean, you can't really knock a guy for who he is.
No. And we've talked about this on this podcast numerous times. PJ Fleck, for what people think is shtick, what they think is, you know, whatever you want to call it, it's genuine. I have had many a conversation with PJ Fleck after practice. And whether the camera's on or off, folks, he is the same way. He says the same things, acts the same way. It isn't just some kind of facade. It is who PJ Fleck is. And again, his style is not going to be for everybody.
Right.
And either you're in the boat or you're out. So it's just something to know.
Yeah. And I appreciate that he, for one, acknowledges it's not going to be for everyone, and that's fine. Right. And he doesn't seem to have a problem with it. So
no, and he's very comfortable in his own skin. That is for sure.
Right. All right. Let's talk a little bit more kind of recruiting sagas or, I don't know, meltdowns. So explain this whole Tyrone Carter, Marquise Williams saga that kind of went down, whether it be through social media, et cetera, et cetera.
It's sad. And it's just, I didn't think I'd have to be dealing with things like this from grown adults. And especially from one of the greatest Gophers in the last, oh, I don't know, 30, 40 years in terms of as many things as he did for Minnesota during his time. But the story goes that Marquez Williams, Tyrone Carter's nephew, who happens to be a highly recruited defensive back, takes an unofficial visit to Minnesota for one of their camps. And he just was there watching camp, hanging out with different commits there that day. I think Brevin Spanford was there. Benny Sapp was there. And he ends up getting some one-on-one time with PJ Fleck. And so it's PJ, it's Marquez, and it's Tyrone's son. And the way things were laid out to me from Minnesota sources was PJ straight up told Marquez, hey, we have four defensive back commits right now. We want you. We want you in the worst way, but you need to know that spots are limited. Because in that subsequent next 48, 72 hours, Minnesota had satellite camps in, I believe, Houston and Ohio. And it was laid out on the table that, hey, we want you, but we're not going to wait forever. Like, if you want to get in the boat, if you want to start rowing, like, things are going to, like, you might have to make a decision here, you know, before the end of the summer. So, in all indications I had heard from that conversation on the Minnesota side of things were that Marquez was like, yeah, you know, I really want Minnesota, but I have to talk things over with my uncle. That something got misconstrued into that Tyrone Carter is a part of the old Minnesota and this is the new Minnesota. And that Tyrone also didn't agree that Minnesota told his nephew that they weren't going to wait for him because, again, this is Minnesota. This is his alma mater. And it blew up from there to the point that Tyrone started just going off on social media. Minnesota sees that, and they're like, yeah, Marquez, we don't – thanks, but it's better off that you don't – that things just don't work out here in Minnesota. So it's unfortunate that an adult cost a child a scholarship. And, again, on the other side of things, wouldn't the thing be if PJ has that same conversation with Marquez and says – and doesn't mention anything about the fact that they have two satellite camps the next day. They have another camp that following weekend, and the spot gets taken. And then Tyrone's like, well, what the hell? Why doesn't my nephew now have a spot? And everybody's just kind of palms in the sky. Well, I don't know. You can't have it both ways. And sure. Again, there's two sides to every story, and I've heard the Minnesota side plenty of times. And from what I've seen in the actions of Tyrone on social media, it's unfortunate. Again, he's one of the greatest Gophers to play in the secondary for Minnesota in a very, very long time. And the fact that he just didn't agree with some of the things that were said, and especially when he wasn't present for the conversation. And the weird thing about that whole thing was this happened on a Saturday, and Tyrone was supposed to come back with Marquez on a Wednesday, that following Wednesday. And everything that happened in that 72-hour period after Saturday, and it was just like, yeah, no, it's not going to work for us. And now Marquez is going to have to find a spot. And the funny thing about it is, too, is his top two schools are Minnesota and Wisconsin. Well, Wisconsin has about two scholarships left. Minnesota has four, potentially, how you view Josh Ani, five defensive back commits. Like, he wants to decide after the season with a January/February/December signing day thing. You can't do that in today's recruiting, especially with those two schools. Minnesota is always under PJ Fleck going to be about 85-90% full in recruiting. And Wisconsin is trending that way as well. So for these kids who want to make a, you know, announcement on ESPN on signing day, where am I going to go? You legitimately have to be one of the top 100 players in America for a school to hold a spot for you that long. And Marquez is a very good player. Don't get me wrong, but he's not one of the top 100 players in America.
Sure.
No. So you just have to, and again, it's unfortunate how it went down, but there's just going to be other options for Minnesota.
Okay. No, it's interesting. Yeah, recruiting is weird. It's just really weird.
It evolves each and every year, and you never know what it's going to come down to. Right. So here we are in recruiting, and now we get to talk about some decommits.
Yeah, so when you're talking decommits, it doesn't surprise me, at least, you know, given how aggressive they are, the PJ Fleck staff is on the recruiting trail to get commits, that they do have a handful of decommits. And it looks like here we list about four. Can you kind of walk me through, you know, this process of decommitting, and especially kind of this unwritten rule they have about visits?
Yeah, it's something you're seeing more and more, is that if you're going to commit to a place like Minnesota, you're committed in every sense of the word. It's like, hey, you know, like, I want to save a spot, so I'm going to commit, but I'm going to visit other places. Like,
so they're not going to take reservations, basically.
No, there will be no reservation commitments. Again, for the majority, there's always special circumstances, but if you look at the four decommitments Minnesota's had. Jalen Mayfield, this was quite a bit ago, decommits, goes to Michigan. He's from Michigan. Makes sense.
Yep.
Junior Uzibu, a Georgia offensive tackle. It was just a weird situation how everything played out, in terms of, he comes up here with his family outside of mom. He gets the green light from mom, gets the green light from his family. He commits. He's got a teammate at the time committed to Minnesota. And then come Mother's Day, mom is like, well, I wasn't there. I don't want you making decisions without me. Minnesota's really far away from home. So he decommits. And then it's like, and then I hear from sources 24 hours afterwards that Junior has told Minnesota he's going to come up in June with mom, and they're going to recommit then. Okay, well, then a few more weeks go by, and what happens? Well, the communication between Uzibu and Minnesota is starting to fall off a little bit. And now he's being, well, I don't know if I can make it. I don't know if it's going to work out. And now Minnesota's out of his top five completely. So, again, every kid's different. Now, and then you look at Noah Shannon, an Illinois defensive tackle, who comes up, visits Minnesota for the first time after visiting Iowa three times, has both parents on the visit. He asks mom and dad if he can commit. Mom and dad are like, heck yeah, we like Minnesota. We love Minnesota. Pulls the trigger on Minnesota. Month and a half goes by, then he decommits. Comes and camps with Minnesota, goes and visits Iowa for the fourth time, which is a weird visit, by the way, because that's the first time he saw the academic side of things. So what in the world was Iowa showing him the first three times? That's really poor recruiting on their part, in my opinion, but he ends up committing to Iowa. Then you look at Nolan Edmonds, a running back Minnesota had committed, comes up in the spring, visits with his parents, pulls the trigger, says, I'm fully committed then. Well, I don't know if you're fully committed if you go and take a visit to Michigan State without telling Minnesota. And it's never really a good thing when we in the media have to be the one to alert a staff to the fact that one of their commits is visiting elsewhere. 24 hours go by afterwards, he decommits, and now he's scheduled to come up here to Minnesota for their barbecue/hyper hangout, what they're calling it here, on July 29th. So, and when you look at each one of these decommitments, does it faze me? No. Again, every one of these situations was different. Every one of these always is going to be. It happens for different reasons. It happens all the time. And that's just what it is in today's day and age of college football. So there's going to be probably more decommitments. It's just the way it is, especially with a December signing period coming up. Personally, if Minnesota – so say Minnesota has 22 kids committed and that December signing period goes by and only 19 of them sign, well, the other three better be for academic reasons, or else I'm taking you off the commitment list, because – if you don't sign for the early signing period, what are you waiting for? AKA, it's a reservation. AKA, you're waiting for a bigger offer. So
yeah,
decommitments are going to happen under Fleck. That's what happens when you have such a rambunctious recruiting style that PJ has. But it also pays off in dividends, and the fact that Minnesota has a top 25 recruiting class right now, but We also have a lot of commitments to talk about since the 29th of April, Luke.
Yeah, so let's cover the ones in June. Starting, let's see, June 2nd, you had two commitments, one from a linebacker safety, Josh Ani, and a tight end wide receiver, Brevin Span Ford, and that followed a camp at Minnesota.
It was. It was the first camp of the year. It was the Friday Night Lights camp. It was a beautiful night. It was super hot that night, I remember, from being there. And from, let's start with Josh Ani, a Highland Park kid here from the Metro. I haven't seen as productive of a camp from a linebacker that I've seen from Josh Ani. I don't joke around here. He probably had three or four interceptions during one-on-ones, probably had three or four other balls batted away. He is all of 6'1", 6'1.5", probably 200-ish pounds. And none of PJ's camps outside the lineman camps are padded, which is a change from the camps under Tracy Clays where every one of them is padded. But I can tell you that Josh moves extremely well. Minnesota believes he's probably going to be an outside linebacker. He could be a safety as of right now. If he keeps his current weight, he'll be a safety. But I don't believe he's going to stay at that current weight, because every time you basically get into a college weight program, college nutrition program, you're going to put on, I don't know, 10, 15 pounds. So if you get him up to 215 pounds, he's probably going to play outside linebacker. But again, a kid that moves extremely well, very athletic. He's another kid, and you're going to hear us talk about it probably a lot. He had a 100-plus Nike Spark score, which does translate into athletic performance success. I've seen a couple of recent studies on that on the internet. So again, a high Nike Spark score, a local kid. Coach Fleck wanted to make sure he took care of the Minnesota State, and that's what he's doing with Ani. And then with Brevin Span Ford, I know that Ryan James has seen him a lot in terms of on the basketball court, because he's a Division I basketball player as well. He had an offer from North Dakota State and would have had more on the basketball side of things if he decided he wanted to pursue on things. He is all of 6'6", 6'7", and he's an extremely fluid athlete, someone that is very fluid with his hands, someone that is still learning how to play football. And when you watch him play wide receiver, when you watch him work with Matt Simon, he gets better each and every rep. And again, I wish he could be on the team for this fall, because Minnesota doesn't have a vertical threat like he is between the seams. He has such good hands for someone that is a 6'7", and he's fast. He's fast enough, I should say. I think he is going to be a fantastic vertical threat for Minnesota as a tight end or a wide receiver, whatever you want to call him. I think he's just going to be a flexed out tight end. We'll see if he can block, but I know he can be a passing game threat.
All right, so let's flash forward to June 11th. They get a commitment from a cornerback after an unofficial visit.
They do. Shamar McDowell, someone from the great state of Florida, came up on an unofficial visit with his family. Minnesota got to see him in person. They thought he had tremendous length. After he left campus, they were able to see what he looked like in person. Everybody on the staff gave the thumbs up before he had his final meeting with Coach Fleck, and Minnesota's got another cornerback. So he is a kid that is going to be transferring to IMG Academy. One of the maybe the most premier football institution in terms of the high school level in the country. Even for kids like that, I know there's a lot of talk of, well, IMG has so many kids and then they just blow teams out for the most part. 80% of their games are 70-7 or whatever they may be. For a kid like McDowell, it's being able to go and get all these practice reps, going against some of the best wide receivers in the country each and every day. And those are the meaningful things. That's what the college coaches are coming down to watch. They're not coming down to watch games for the most part. Come down to watch you practice against some of the best college players in America. So Minnesota believes they have a really good corner, someone with a lot of length in Shamar McDowell, and he's only going to get better going against who he has to for his senior year.
All right, let's go just a day after that, July 12th, you have a Georgia wide receiver, Rashad Bateman. He commits after a Georgia satellite camp.
He does, and the interesting part about him is he's someone who had Big Ten basketball offers. You go and watch a little bit of his highlight tape on the basketball side of things. I think the first five or six plays are a kid that's 6'1", getting elbow deep in the rim. The kid's athletic, and you look at because I believe his college offers were Penn State and I think Rutgers on the basketball side of things, and he recently going up until that June satellite camp, I believe the decision was made in early May, mid-May, that he was going to play football. And so a bunch of colleges had already come through thinking he was a basketball player. So in my opinion, I think his recruitment was slowed because of that. Again, if you're unsure whether he's going to play basketball or football, and he's already got legitimate Big Ten committable basketball offers, and he didn't have too many Power Fives on the football side of things, well, why would I go and try and get him to campus, try and get him to camp? Well, Minnesota wasn't fazed, and once they saw that he wanted to play football, they really made sure that they wanted to get him to that satellite camp. And they'd already put in a lot of legwork behind the scenes. They made sure his mother was there and come to that camp. Because what I'm learning more and more from sources, especially with a wide receiver, Minnesota's Matt Simon and obviously head football coach PJ Fleck have to sign off on the recruit, and no better chance to do that at all these camps. You look at Minnesota's three wide receiver commits, Eric Gibson, Rashad Bateman, and Jornell Manns. All three have camped with Minnesota this June, and all three I know Minnesota is very high on. And where I think Rashad can really fit into the fold is he can be that X or Z receiver in terms of he can be very explosive. He still really doesn't know what he's doing because, again, he was a full-time basketball player for the most part up until, oh my gosh, probably a few months ago. Again, he was on the AAU circuit, and Luke can tell you all about that. So Minnesota is very high on Rashad Bateman, and he is now their highest-rated wide receiver commit.
All right, so tell me what's good about Nathan Bowe, interior lineman from Lakeville.
That Nathan earned his offer at camp at Minnesota's Big Man Camp. I was at the camp that day, and Nathan has a ways to go in terms of strength development, and I think you're going to see him only get better from there. He's a 6'4", 260 pounds. I mean, I've stood next to the guy. I'm very well aware of how big he is. He has a tremendously large lower body in terms of he's got huge legs, and he still has a lot of work to do in terms of developing his upper body strength, getting stronger, different things like that. But Minnesota really likes that he's athletic. He's 6'4". He's from the state of Minnesota, and knowing that offensive linemen in terms of the Midwest outlook for offensive linemen this year, I can't tell you how bad it is in terms of I have talked with numerous Dakota coaches, numerous, Minnesota sources, and they are all very down on this year's Midwest recruiting class in terms of offensive linemen. So Minnesota thought they had something with Nathan Bowe at an earlier Minnesota camp, made sure that they got him back for a padded camp. He worked with Ed Warner. Ed Warner really wanted him, and now Minnesota's got their center of the future, Nathan Bowe. I think that once we get a proper rating on him, I've talked with scout Midwest analyst Alan True about this, and that's he's probably going to be a low three-star center, probably going to be a top 20 center in terms of that's where he's going to be. But I feel pretty comfortable with that low to mid three-star rating for Mr. Nathan Bowe.
All right, so June 21st, the Gophers got a commitment from a linebacker from Ohio named Thomas Rush. He also went to a satellite camp. So what do we know about Thomas and the background on that satellite camp?
Well, what we know is that Thomas hasn't really played linebacker in a couple of years here. Thomas was actually committed to the University of Bowling Green as a running back, and he's 6'3", 210 pounds, and he's another kid, had 100-plus Nike camp or a Nike Spark score. He was, I believe, 6'3", 210 pounds, ran really well, had a high – he had a high vertical jump, amongst other things, and he ended up camping at Penn State the week before Minnesota. And from talking with some Penn State people, I remember talking and asking him, did you see him at the Penn State camp? Because this was leading up to the Minnesota camp. He's like, yeah, I just camped at Penn State. So I'm like, do you remember this kid? And I'm like, and my Penn State guy goes, well, I know that there was like a 6'3" redhead that the staff at Penn State was following around a lot. Is he redheaded? I'm like, yep, that was probably him. He goes, oh, well, he moves really well. So Minnesota worked him out as a linebacker. Rob Smith spent a ton of time with him at that Ohio satellite camp. Minnesota ended up offering that night, and Thomas committed on the spot, and he ended up booking a flight to Minnesota that subsequent next day to come see it for the first time. So he committed sight unseen. Now that he's seen it with his parents, he feels even better about the decision. But again, 6'3", runs really well, tests really well. You have to be able to trust Rob Smith that he can develop linebacker talent. But again, Minnesota's very high on that. They got a very good outside linebacker in Rob Smith's defensive scheme.
All right, continuing to June 22nd, the Gophers land a commitment from Florida running back Bryce Williams. He committed after an unofficial visit for the Gophers, this being probably what their second running back or second running back recruit at the time. Yeah.
Yes, and that was subsequent. I believe Nolan Edmonds decommitted, and of course in air quotes there, because again, he and Minnesota came to the resolution that it's not, you know, it's not right to be committed right now. So again, Nolan Edmonds may recommit to Minnesota subsequently later this month. But Bryce, it looked interesting because Nolan decommits and then Bryce commits, and it's like, well, what happened there? It's just circumstantial that it happened that way. Bryce Williams is a Shannon Brooks, and I am, from the first time I watched Bryce Williams tape, he's from Cardinal Mooney High School down in Florida. I immediately thought, wow, you run a lot like Shannon Brooks. He is a big, I mean, they even look the same in terms of their physical stature. Shannon, obviously fans know, 5'10", 5'11", 200 plus pounds, very, very physically imposing. And I believe Bryce is 6', 210-ish pounds. And even the running styles are extremely similar in terms of Bryce likes to run a little bit more upright than most, but he's able to get away with it because he's so patient. And the way he's able to explode into the second level and run through contact because of how physically, because of his physical stature. And again, and I mentioned that to one of my Minnesota sources, and they immediately, that's exactly what I thought when I watched the tape for the first time, was this guy reminds me a lot of Shannon Brooks. So glad to know that I'm not completely off based on my flaming hot takes. So I think if Bryce can get here, and that's going to be the big question, because I do think more offers are going to come his way. From talking with his high school coach, he did camp at South Carolina and picked up a South Carolina offer. So again, you look at that, Bryce commits to Minnesota over a camp offer from South Carolina. Hopefully Minnesota is able to hang on to him in the long run.
All right, so rounding out the June, let's call it commitment class, on June 24th, you have a Florida defensive lineman commit to Minnesota after an official visit. His name is Mayan. I'm not even going to attempt his last name.
Mayan Ahanotu.
See, that I wouldn't even have been close.
This is why I'm here. And Mayan is the son of a 12-year NFL veteran. I'm going to butcher this. Again, this is a little bit before my time. His father was Chidi Ahanotu, someone that I believe that played in Tampa. He's a Cal graduate, someone that obviously had 12 years in the NFL. So you look at his son, had over 30 offers, and I believe at least 15 of them were Power 5. And the final group that he ended up choosing between was Oklahoma and Cal and Minnesota. So you look at Mayan, someone that is 6'3", I believe, 250 pounds. I think he's going to play that 5 or 7 technique for Minnesota somewhat, so that obviously he's not going to be a rush DN of sorts, the Carter Coughlin and Teyon Devers type of role. But he's someone that big, physically strong in terms of being able to hold the edge against the rush and also having some pass rushing moves. You have to love the NFL bloodline there and the fact that Minnesota beats out a few different Power 5 offers for him. Obviously, anytime you beat California, Oklahoma, Illinois, amongst others, you got to be thrilled. So 8 commitments in June for Minnesota, and now has them as a top 25 recruiting class. As of last check earlier this evening, they're the 23rd rated recruiting class by scout.com with 19 commits, and that's only going to go up as we're going to have some re-rankings on some of these kids as scout.com is transitioning to a different rating system, one that is going to go from generic 3-star types to we're going to go over to more of a 24/7 type of model, as now Scout and 24/7 are now owned by the same parent company. So we're going to have different ratings from one another, but we are going through a little bit of a transition period that should be over here by the end of the month. So there's going to be some different ratings, and I think that there's going to be, or I know there's going to be bumps to a few of Minnesota's different commits. So it's only going to go up for Minnesota, but 19 commits, a top 25 recruiting class as we sit here on July 5th. Not a lot to complain about on my end, Luke.
Okay, so to close out kind of the recruiting maybe discussion until before we go to kind of mailbag stuff, you've got 19 commits right now. This is kind of foreign territory for Gopher fans, right? So you, it's a long way to February. Probably still quite a few fluid situations, but you know, realistically, how many spots do the Gophers really have left?
Depends on who you talk to. I know I asked this question to a very good source of mine about 2-3 weeks ago, and he told me expect Minnesota to sign 25. The issue is, and I think there's a few different questions about it in the mailbag. Minnesota has to have some transfers for that to happen. I don't know. That shocks the right word, but I'm very surprised that there weren't some transfers out between the spring and the summer season. I'm surprised that a few different kids didn't see the writing on the wall, but as of right now, I expect Minnesota to sign close to 25. And so in terms of spots, it's not like there's a specific, position group more or less. I mean, there are a few. Minnesota would like to add another defensive tackle. They would like to add a rush end of sorts. They would like to add another couple of offensive tackles, maybe the right running back, maybe the right defensive back. But again, at this point, it's now, well, let's see who the best of the best is and who we can have be realistic in terms of who we could get committed. So 19 commits right now. I'd expect them to sign, though, close to 25 come December.
All right, so let's hit a handful of these mailbag questions. You posted this on your message board on gopherillustrated.com as well as Twitter. I will do my best to get through these quickly, as we want to be efficient with our time. But
yes.
First question, all day PT. Can you really compare the 2018 recruiting class amongst the Big Ten? Maybe what do you expect in the 2019 class?
Well, let's start with the 2019 class. I know that, again, I think we've touched on this before, but in terms of, in terms of the recruiting class that Minnesota has right now, and I know a lot of folks were talking, there's a lot of talk about recruiting with PJ Fleck. He talks about how it's the lifeblood of your program. Well, yes. And again, it's not going to happen overnight. And so you see Minnesota in 2017 competing against schools like SMU, Western Kentucky, Louisiana Tech most of the time. And again, that worked on the defensive side of the ball in terms of in the back seven. But it really hurt Minnesota in every other place outside of running back for the most part. And now you see their 2018 class, where it's a lot of mid to high level three-star kids. I believe about 85% plus of these guys all have other Power Five offers. And so that's the first step. And the next step is going to be, okay, now in that 2019 class, we really have to start getting, these high three, low four-star type kids, and then you keep working up from there. And how that can be in terms of the 2019 class, well, I can tell you Minnesota really, really, really like to start it out with Bryce Benhart and Quinn Carroll. Obviously, Quinn being a top 100, 150 offensive tackle, basically has an offer from everyone in the country he wants an offer from. And then Bryce Benhart, a Lakeville North offensive tackle, has UCLA, Minnesota, and Wisconsin, amongst others. So again, those could be your big twin towers of the future. Quinn, or either one of them, put them at the tackle positions, and you're going to have a very, very happy quarterback for the next few years. But in terms of how Minnesota's recruiting class compares to the other teams in the Big Ten, well, you look at the scout.com recruiting rankings, and there are, if I count correctly, 9 teams in the Big Ten in the top 30, which is traditionally, you always think of the SEC schools in terms of being in the top of the recruiting rankings. Well, there's 9 in the top 30. So if you're going to be competing in the Big Ten West, which Minnesota is 23rd, they're right above of Maryland, Michigan State, and Nebraska, right below Wisconsin and Northwestern. Again, you're right in the thick of things of where you need to be in the Big Ten West. So that I think they're off to a pretty good start thus far.
All right. Another question from Roger Gophers. If you're looking at things that the Gophers could do better and maybe did poorly last year, how could they improve to help win close games? So what are they going to do better this year that might help them win close games?
Have a quarterback that doesn't throw away the ball in the second half would be a gigantic start in the right direction. Luke, how many times have we touched on this? Last year, Minnesota won 9 games. They went 9-4. All four of their losses, they were leading in the second half, and three out of the four, they were leading in the fourth quarter. What was the difference in most of those games? I'm going to tell you quarterback play. Again, you have a quarterback that didn't value the ball in terms of the possession, in terms of making sure that we take care of the ball in crunch time when you need to be able to be confident with the ball. And now, hopefully, with Demry Croft or maybe Connor Rhoda there, it's going to be valued a little bit more. But that's the biggest thing that stands out to me is, he asked, what do you expect us to be better at to help us win games? Well, hopefully a team that values the ball in the second half.
I'd like to actually add to that. I think one thing that you're going to see is hope. Well, I guess I don't know that you're going to see it, but I'm hoping that you're going to see a little bit more balance offensively. I thought at times the Gophers were just too darn predictable, and that led to a lot of, in passing downs, they pass more often. Hopefully they're just less predictable.
And some of that becomes because the playbook is shortened because there's only so many things you can do with your quarterback and with your offensive line. So again, hopefully improved run blocking and hopefully improved quarterback play can do some things.
Improve run blocking too has to do with even just guys' ability to stay healthy as well, right? Like it's 2 years in a row now that they've really not been able to assemble a consistent healthy offensive line.
Well, and some of that also comes from, you couldn't run the ball because there were 6, 7, 8 guys in the box.
Exactly.
They weren't scared at all.
Yeah.
The quarterback actually delivering a decent throw down the field. So again, have a quarterback that can be a threat as a passer, and you're going to see the running lanes also open up for the running backs.
Okay, this segues somewhat nicely. I don't know how some people come up with these screen names, but Touchman...
Minneapolis Gopher fan, dude.
No, I'm going to a different question. It's Touchman Marsh. He's wondering about the 20-plus surgeries, and specifically wanting to touch on Lingen, Durr, and some of the starting offensive linemen. Let's start with the starting offensive linemen. Where are some of these guys at, in terms of recovering from surgery?
So I talked with a source this evening before we hopped on the podcast here about it. And in terms of the three starting offensive linemen, they are all still progressing and should be fully healthy come fall camp. There are a few of them that are still a little bit limited in terms of what they can do, but they are all progressing towards the stage here where in the coming weeks they should be 100% full go. In terms of Brandon Lingen, I've actually received good news there, and I wasn't really expecting it. And what I've heard is that Lingen's 100%, but Minnesota, in that same respect, in that 100% breath, is being cautiously optimistic with him.
Sure.
In terms of they know how valuable he's going to be if he's healthy. So while he is very close to 100% what he can do, I mean, he's running routes, different things like that after he had off-season lower extremity surgery, they're being cautious with him. But the expectation is, barring no setbacks, Brandon Lingen is going to be 100% for fall camp. And then finally with Coney Durr, he's ahead of schedule. That's very good. But again, I don't want you to rush Coney Durr back, even though I know in the short term, you don't have a lot of defensive backs.
Sure.
But his long-term prognosis for this team, I think, is greater, and I think that outweighs the risks of potentially rushing him back. I think he himself would tell you he's optimistic that he can come back and be ready for fall camp, but I hope Minnesota takes it easy on him and hopefully eases him in as the season goes on.
Okay. Question about from Irwinna. He asks about, with Fleck, is the offensive line training changed, right? There are a lot of head injuries, et cetera, that we've talked about in the past. You had a handful of guys have to quit just because of head injuries. And he basically is insinuating that he heard some third-hand information that there were some people that were troubled by the previous regime's handling of offensive line and many of the offensive line injuries.
I bet you I can probably name the fathers of the offensive linemen.
Sure.
But I'm not going to get into that sort of thing. Minnesota was pretty aggressive with the way that they ran their offensive and defensive line practices. And that it wasn't always smiled upon by certain people. But I can tell you it's a different regime here with Ed Warner. And again, how is that going to translate to practices? Well, I can't really use spring practice as an example for everybody because Minnesota didn't have enough healthy offensive linemen to really go full go. So I don't really know how that would have translated if they would have had 10 plus bodies instead of four at times. But things in terms of just strength and conditioning overall, I know I've heard the comment from different player parents that things are just different in terms of the way that they go about things, the different kind of lifts they do, the different kind of training they do. It is a little bit different. So in terms of offensive line handling, I don't know that even the offensive lineman could tell you that they don't know how things are, how different they're going to be, just because either they were injured or they were one of four healthy bodies that had to take each and every rep. So sure. Check back in with me in about 4 months.
Okay. Going on, continuing with the staff, a question from MPLS Gopher. Basically, how is the staff doing? He alludes to that Fleck often can look tired, and you know, how are they adapting even just to Minnesota life, you know, all coming from, you know, different corners of the country?
I can tell you they're very thankful for this break, because they didn't really get one since the point that they were hired and to where they are now. I mean, you look at they finished the Cotton Bowl and they're about to head out on the recruiting trail for Western Michigan. The PJ's hired and they have 3 weeks to put together a recruiting class, and then that transitions into a couple of the junior days. That transitions into spring ball, that transitions into spring recruiting, that transitions into June, which is basically all camps. And now that the dead period has hit for about a week, week and a half now, you know, they're finally able to catch their breath. They're finally able to spend some time with their wives, spend some time with their children. You know, you look at Ed Warner going to Key West. You look at Matt Simon going up with his wife up to northern Minnesota to get some R&R time there. Rob Wenger with his wife, he just announced that he's going to have a baby gopher here. So he and his wife are expecting. Now, again, they finally get to realize what it's like to live in Minnesota. And PJ goes to Disney with his wife and his children as well. So for as much as PJ Fleck is always going 110% all the damn time, I bet you he's just excited to not have a camera in his face. For at least 24, 48 hours. I bet you by this time he's already rearing to go, ready to get back on the recruiting trail. But they're all assimilating pretty well from what I've heard.
All right, NL Gopher asked, is the stand-up rush end like Carter Coughlin in the 4-3 something the staff is wanting to keep as a base defense going forward, or is it more just a circumstance of the roster breakdown this year and looking for a more traditional 4-3, and they're looking for the pieces to fill in for it?
Well, the answer to that is it's still in flux. I think that's more of this staff wants to be a 4-3. I mean, that's what Rob Smith and PJ Fleck want to do. In that same respect, are you going to have the bodies to adequately be able to do that? Or do you want to have that rush end of sorts and be able to always be a threat to get to the passer? Again, you, with Abby Okonjo, with Maya Nahanatu, you have a couple of big defensive ends there that you can put there in running situations, and then bring in these linebackers like Jay Saville did last year and bring them more as pass rushers. But I don't think the rush end spot is going away in the near future. Maybe in 3-4 years it'll be gone. But in the next foreseeable future here, in the next one, two years, I think it's going to be here to stay for now.
All right, NL Gopher again. Top target for defensive line and defensive back spots.
Okay. David Green is a Pittsburgh defensive tackle. Someone I talked with today, he told me that he's hoping to decide by the end of the month. And Minnesota's in his final group. I believe he'd be a take for Minnesota at this time. I also know that Josh Walker is someone that, like, in the last 12 hours, Minnesota is trying to ramp up their conversation with, especially now that the news that Noah Shannon about 24 hours ago decided he's going to Iowa. So Minnesota was going to wait and see what Noah did before they moved on any other defensive tackles. That's a name. Samuel Moore from Verndale, Minnesota is another name to watch. Someone who has an Iowa offer and an NDSU offer. Samuel Moore is like a flashback to 1992, where he got a cell phone 4 weeks ago. Just think about that. How many kids before they even get to high school have a cell phone nowadays?
Sure.
Like, he doesn't have any social media outside of a Facebook. Like, his recruiting process before 4 weeks ago went through his father. So, like, unless you knew who this kid was, you were not going to find out about him. Minnesota's hoping to be able to get him to their hyper hangout and camp at the end of the month. but we'll see if he commits to Iowa or North Dakota State before then. And then finally, I really don't like talking about John Wagner, a scout 300 four-star kid. He has consistently, in recent interviews with different scout reporters and publishers, mentioned Minnesota as the school recruiting him the hardest. Yet every time I seem to talk with him, a Minnesota visit is never set. So again, that's a name to watch. I don't necessarily feel very confident about it. In fact, I don't feel confident about it at all until I hear definite word from John himself that he has set a Minnesota visit. And then DB names, I think that's something that they're going to be looking at here again after the dead period ends. They feel very good about where they're at with 4/5 defensive back commits. But I do believe in the next – well, the dead period ends on Monday. So I think that next week you're going to see more names show up.
All right. PNW Gopher asked you about the quarterback and offensive line status. We kind of already talked a little bit of offensive line. But particularly he mentions, you know, it seems that Rota's not going to go down without a fight, and he's curious about if Morgan is going to redshirt.
Yeah. I believe he mentions Rota because he won the whatever PJ Fleck award for offseason performance in the weight room and workouts. He won that. And again, you knew that Connor Rota is probably the best leader of the quarterbacks. So that doesn't surprise me at all. But I do think when things come to a point here in fall camp, Demery Croft is the better option. Connor's not going to go down without a fight. You knew that was going to happen. I do expect Tanner Morgan to redshirt, even though he's probably the third quarterback in my eyes on this roster. And then we've already talked offensive line. So I will note that I did talk with somebody about the offensive line, someone – very close to the Gopher staff who may or may not know a lot about the offensive line. And I know Minnesota knows that they have some things in some of these younger guys. They really like Nick Conley. They really like Sam Schluter, Connor Olson. They think that they're going to be able to do some things with Quinn Osland at guard. And then they also think that Donnell Green has a very bright future ahead of him as well. So while the offensive line, I mean, I've harped on it for as long as this podcast has been in existence, since Minnesota had an offensive lineman drafted since 2006, here's to hoping that drought ends here sooner rather than later.
Transplanted to 216 guy asks, has Adam Beck made it to campus?
Luke, do you know who Adam Beck is?
Adam Beck is a defensive back. I think something about Texas Tech. Like,
look at you.
Yeah, I heard you say some of those words once.
So Adam Beck is not on campus yet. He is finishing up a credit that he needs to earn, and as long as he doesn't flunk the class, he's going to be at Minnesota, and I believe that is going to be mid to late July, but he's not here yet.
All right, I'm gonna switch to maybe some Twitter questions. Ryan asks, how much playing time do you see Autumn Bell getting, and what are your thoughts on how the secondary will look?
I do think how much playing time do I think he gets? It depends on how he looks in fall camp. I know from talking with somebody close to the Gopher staff about the wide receivers and what he's seen from him so far. You know, he was high on them. And again, something to the effect of, you know, they're all impressive. They have a lot of work to do, but they are very impressive. And Autumn Bell, the biggest of the three. I have heard some whispers that someone in that 2017 wide receiver class may need to get realize that this isn't high school anymore and you're not the big man on campus. So you may need to realize that come fall camp, it's dog eat dog and you better be ready. What was the other half of the question? I don't remember.
The other half of the question, I don't know.
I'll try and find it here. Hold on a second.
Sorry. I deleted it. How'd the secondary look? You touched on that a little bit already, but yeah.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the spot on defense where there cannot be a lot of injuries because I don't want a full season of Kunle Ayende because you saw his heavy legs towards the latter half of the season. But you're going to be relying a lot on Antonio Chanel, Keandre Thomas. Keandre Thomas hasn't played yet. You know, Justice Harris, Adam Beck, Kendarian Handy Holly. It's going to be very inexperienced, but again, we'll see how it plays out. I can't reiterate enough. This is a position group that if there is a large amount of injuries, that's how you get to five or six wins this fall.
All right. So MN Gong Show asks, transfers. It seems to be a lot less than we're expecting in spring ball. Why do you think that is? Players buying into more than we thought they would?
Minnesota will never say this, and I obviously can't name names, but I've talked with a couple of Minnesota sources about it, and I'm like, I'm surprised we didn't hear about any transfers. And I was talking with a source following one of Minnesota's camps, and he's like, you and me both, because I thought some kids would see the writing on the wall that, you know, maybe I'm not going to play here, so maybe I might want to look elsewhere. But as like Dalen Elmore and Andrew Hart are the only couple of transfers, and it's like that surprised me because I probably could have named some receivers, a running back or two, a couple of linebackers potentially as well. That it'd be like you're not going to play like outside of injuries and maybe special teams. So that's surprising to me. I don't know that I have an answer for it. Maybe kids want to go through an entire season to see what it's like before making a potential decision to transfer, but I'm a bit surprised by that.
All right. Dave Anderson asks on Twitter, what are your expectations for this year? Can the Gophers compete for the division with the new coaching staff, and how many wins do you think are possible?
I think I've already touched on my expectations. I'm expecting 7-5 right now. Again, that can fluctuate by one or two, either way. And I think Bill Conley of SB Nation did a fantastic preview of what expectations should be like. And as he noted in there, and we've talked about it, Minnesota could go anywhere from 9-3 to 3-9. It really depends on how they do in close games. And again, what does it come down to in close games? Quarterback play and line play and how well you take care of the ball, plus special teams. And I think Minnesota special teams should be, you know, better than a majority of the teams they face. Quarterback is a huge question. And then offense and defensive line, how they hold up in the second half, I think is going to be a big question. So expectations for me, 6-6, 7-5. And again, if Tracy Clays was here, I would probably be at 6-6. But with PJ here and a competent quarterback coaching staff, I'm at 7-5. So can they compete for the division? I mean, I've seen crazier things happen in terms of, again, you have a first-year quarterback, a first-year system on offense and defense, a brand-new head coach. You need to have some wide receivers step up. You need some guys in the offensive line to step up. You need the secondary to stay healthy. So can I see 9 wins like Bill Conley points out? Yes. But I also can probably see 4 or 5 if injuries hit the wrong positions. So, again, we'll get into that later here this month as we continue to break down this team. But, it's a very wide range of possibilities.
Yeah, I think I'll add a comment or two here. But, the Gophers really were very fortunate to have a strong defense, right? And that was really the backbone on which they relied very heavily in years past, right? And that's going to keep you in a lot of ball games. So then that's basically, you know, they were able to rely on the strong defense, and then ultimately, you know, with strong special teams play, that can, you know, make or break a game for you. And they were fortunate enough to basically be in a situation a lot where they were in close ball games. They won a few, they lost a few. I think for a lot of Gopher fans, they were frustrated by the fact that they weren't able to close out ones or maybe take that next step.
I mean, you look at last year, as you mentioned. You know, Minnesota has decent quarterback play that values the ball in the second half, and we're looking at a 10-win-plus team for the first time in how many years? So, again, how is the quarterback going to take care of the ball in the second half? Well, first I need to have the answer to that. I need to know who the quarterback is before I can answer that for you folks. But, yeah, again, I think it's a wide range of expectations.
It's very hard to prognosticate with so many variables. Things that you do know, there's going to be a very strong defensive line, especially defensive tackle, right? There's going to be a very strong linebacking core. I think that for the most part, as long as they can put a semblance of a secondary together, they're going to have a very strong defense again, regardless of what system or scheme you run. I don't think the new regime is dumb and that they're going to try and force these players to play a system rather than fit a system to the players, right? But offensively, that's where, to me, all the real question marks are. Can, you know, quarterback, can they put something together there? They literally are losing, you know, what, 40 or 50% of their catches from last year. They have no proven commodities at wide receiver as well. There's so many offensive question marks that until we see a game, or until, Ryan, you get to see a handful of practices, it's really going to be hard to even quantify what's even possible. So I'm with Conley at 3-9 or 9-3 are all realistic options.
Couldn't put it any better.
Okay, and apparently Kevin Faulness wants to know what our thoughts on the Wild offseason are, and I actually have lots of thoughts.
Let me start by saying Faulness knows that I know what's happening in a hockey game. I never have played hockey. I have skated like twice or three times in my life.
Yeah,
like I always was playing basketball. I have pulled up here the Fox Sports Minnesota Wild team transactions. Like, I couldn't tell you any of who these people are.
I was just going to say, who are these guys?
I knew who Pominville was, Scandella, Jordan Schrader or Schroeder. Like, I know who they are. I couldn't tell you what line they were on. Like, I don't know how I feel about Zach Palmquist signing a 1-year contract or
basically
whoever the heck Marcus Fulgino or Tyler Ennis are. Like, I don't know. Isn't Tyler Ennis the point guard for the Phoenix Suns?
Well, basically, Kevin, if you're listening, and you said you would be, if you didn't play for the Gophers and your name isn't Jake Gardner, I probably don't have the slightest idea who you are.
All I know is once I get my deer this fall and I give Kevin some much needed backstraps or venison or whatever he wants. Hopefully that I can get some Wild tickets from him in return so I can take the significant other to a game or two. But, you know, hopefully, Kevin, by that time, I'll know who people are outside of, like, wow, this makes me look even worse. Trying to name, like, Darcy Kemper. Is he still on the team?
I think he's the goalie. And then there is Mikko Koivu. He's been around forever.
Yeah, Koivu, Parisi, Ryan Suter. I mean, I can name guys. Like, when I'm watching the broadcast on Fox Sports North, when I have the TV muted and I'm listening to the beautiful Kevin Faulness in between periods on, I believe it is KFAN, like, I know what's going on, but I probably, you know, we're the worst.
I also know
we are the worst Wild minds. Now, let us talk some Timberwolves. Like, let's go. It's Cat Wiggins, Jimmy Jam, let's go.
Oh, boy.
Like, we need to get some shooting. But, yeah. here's my big – I'm going to tangent off the Wild to the Timberwolves. If you're listening to this and you can't name, the Luke Ridenour years, Tom Gugliotta, Rosho Nesterovich, Alexei Shved, if you aren't there for those years, I don't want you on the bandwagon now. You weren't there for the years of Al Jefferson, of Alexei Shved.
What about Luke
Ridenour? Corey Brewer, like, now that we're finally, like, relevant, come on. Don't, like, I know that you're all, everybody's going to be jumping on the bandwagon now that Jimmy Jam is here, but, like, come on, folks. Come on. If you weren't a Wolves fan now, come on now.
Okay, so I think we need to, like, basically finish this up now that we've digressed to, like, professional hockey and professional basketball. So let's let people know what they can kind of expect. Let's looking into the future. Looks like we probably are trying to get an offensive preview put together in place probably for next week. Maybe 2 weeks after that, we'll talk defensive preview. And then all of a sudden, like, seriously, people, football is right around the corner. You know, it could be August-ish, maybe late July. I don't actually know what the NCAA rules are, but yeah.
I think it has to be like, well, I think Andy Greeter had it from the Pioneer Press that fall camp's going to begin on August 1st. So, again, we're here on the 5th. We have this episode that's going to be out to you guys. We're hoping to get, as Luke said, the offensive preview for the 12th, the defensive preview for the 19th. For the 26th, we will talk some fall camp storylines along with previewing the hyper hangout / the Gophers barbecue / the Gophers final camp. And then, like, the week after that, here we are. Fall camp is here. Year one of PJ Fleck. So we are going to be hopefully weekly here, probably every Wednesday, depending on what Luke's schedule looks like. So Gopher Gridiron Radio is back, folks. It is fall. It is almost fall as we are here in middle of July. So a lot of goodness, a lot of Gopher goodness to expect here, folks.
All right, let's make sure that we try and get a hold of Derek Burns, like let him know football's coming, and then I think we'll probably be good.
Yes, wherever in the world Derek Burns is. So right. I believe Derek's going to be on with us to break down games again this fall. And again, folks, if you love listening to these podcasts, you know, head on over to Gopher Illustrated. It's where all my work is, along with Ryan James. He and I published a 4,300-something word mailbag of everything on Gopher basketball, Gopher football, plus recruiting, the latest and greatest of everything that's going on. So if you are a Gopher fan and you are not on Gopher Illustrated for the best Gopher football, Gopher basketball, and recruiting news around, I think you're missing out.
All right. I will second Mr. Burns's endorsement of his website. And I want to thank you again for listening. You can rate the podcast on iTunes, and that would be much appreciated. For now, go Gophers.